kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is Wednesday. That means we've got more reviews to take care of. Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
I need energy. I'm drinking tea at 10 o'clock, and I made the dumb decision to make myself go to the gym, even though my diet consisted of a smoothie and a bagel.
Oh, geez.
For the entire day. So I learned that the body needs fuel to function.
Yeah, it does.
Science 101. I was dragging. I was like, do a plank. I'm like, no. Just like went face down on the mat and didn't even get up. Didn't even try to get up. It was like, once I move, people will know I'm down on the ground. But if I don't move, I can just, no one will see me. I'll blend into the floor.
And then
I'll
eventually get up.
That's right. You know what I'm talking about.
You're a chameleon.
Karma chameleon? On I go. But yeah, it was a, God, that's a weird song. On I go. But yeah, otherwise, I'm doing, it's a good time. I'm doing all right. Trying to get my game on. Hating the fact that I feel like winter or spring was kidnapped by winter and is holding her ransom. And I don't know what she wants to bring her back. But it needs to happen because it's been nonstop rain for like the last 3 days, and it doesn't feel good. I like the rain, but right now it just feels like it's such a downer. Not to mention the fact that I'm kind of in this position where I'm like, you know, what if my roof is having issues and I don't know it because I can't get up here to check because the rain's coming in. I don't know. So
now you're gonna have me wondering about my roof.
Well, you just got the house, which means you probably had an inspection recently, so I doubt you're going to have issues with the roof just yet.
Yeah, you never know.
That's true, and if you do have issues with your roof, you can be all up on the guy and such. What the hell is that about? I paid you how much for this botched job? And he's going to look at you and go, what job? Who are you? How'd you get in my house? So, and that'll be weird in and of itself, but you know.
I think we were told when we moved in we have about 10 years left on the roof.
Oh, that's the sweet stuff right there. I think mine was like, you got like 3. It's like, well then, $10,000 issue coming right up.
Yep.
But I digress. I'm doing good, playing games, not sleeping enough, and trying to make life into something that I want to deal with. We're talking, figure out what women like and date them. Figure out what games are good and play them. Figure out what companies want and give it to them, still give you money. And then, I don't know, last but not least, spend less money because I have an obsession with buying board games like you wouldn't believe. It's ridiculous. But they're all so fun.
I've been doing better on buying games lately. Like, I used to have a problem where every collector's edition that came out, I needed to get it. And now, like, the last collector edition I got was the Generation Zero one. Before that, I can't even remember. And then just today, I got Rage.
Uh-huh. See, that's the one thing I got to get. I've gotten better at that, too, honestly. I used to get every NIST software called Collector's Edition. And then I used to get just, like, random. Like, basically, if it was an RPG, I had a Collector's Edition for it. Mm-hmm. But then I started looking at them, and I was like, you know, it looked cool when you're all about grabbing. You're thinking, no, this is an excellent thing to have. It looks so good on my shelf. But then something happened. I got cheap. Space became less plentiful. And then I realized that most of the stuff they put in Collector's Editions are kind of needless. Like, for example, I'm a big man, a big fan of video game music. So mm-hmm. You would think a packed in OST would be a great sell. Problem is, it's never the full OST. It's usually just some of the OST. And yeah, that's
it's ridiculous. Like 15 songs if you're lucky.
Yeah, at that point, it's like, what the hell is the point? Like, at that point, you may as well just, I don't know, not give me any of them because I want the whole OST. If you're going to advertise OST, give me the OST. And if it means you got to pay a little bit more for the collector's edition, I'd rather pay the whole to get the whole than have this useless disc or fraction of a disc on my shelf. And then, there's, of course, there's like other weird things like you get Oh, I see. I like, I kind of like me to get pendants, but it'll be something like paper cutouts of the characters. And you're like, what the hell do I do with this? I'm never going to put this on my desk. And if I do, I might spill coffee on it and it'll just dissolve it because, you know, it's just paper. Like, it's rarely something where you actually kind of foam at the mouth and go, I got to have this. I need to get this. Like, I look back on like the Working Designs Collector's Edition sometimes. I'm like, okay, some of these were awesome. Like getting the cloth map of the game you're playing. Oh, if you end up really liking the game, it's like, I can hang this cloth map on my wall. That's kind of nifty, you know, but not even getting that. It's just, I don't know. It makes it easier to justify fighting your urge to just have the premium of something. And then a week after the game comes out, you'll forget you ever wanted it in the first place because you're too busy playing the game that you wanted.
Yeah. See, I have this issue where if it has a steelbook, I need to have it.
Oh, yeah. I like steelbooks. That's shelf presentation in a way that makes sense, though. It's like, it's a case, it's useful, and it looks good. So, as long as I don't have to pay extra. And a lot of times, steelbooks, you don't have to pay extra. Though, a number of companies did pick up on the fact that that is a selling point, and they'll make that like the standing of the $20 extra CE. I'm like, I don't want it that badly, but sometimes, like, you know, Best Buy will just say, buy it from our store and we'll give you a steelbook.
Yeah.
Which pretty much guarantees that they'll get the sale, even without Gamers Club Unlocked.
I still have mine for a couple more months, so I'm enjoying it while I have it.
I have it under someone else's name, because it ain't my account, but they sure as hell let me use it, and I'm fine with it.
Hey, whatever works.
Damn Skippy.
Get that 20% off.
But at least it does help that, due to the, you know, Review Fest 9/11, honestly, that's one thing that's helped with, like, video game purchasing. I'm like, you know, games, I rarely end up with a bad game. I rarely do. So what ends up happening is, it's like, hey, you can go out and buy this, you know, $60 game, or you can review these two $15 games. And then in the end, what ends up happening is I end up enjoying what I'm playing on the $15 games, and since it's taking up all of my free time, in that regard, it's like, you know, I don't really need the $60 game because I'm enjoying the games I am playing, and they're cheaper, and I don't have to get them. It just works out better. I think the last game I bought was like Zonky Zero, which is a game I have an interest in, but I'm like, I had to buy it. I had to do anything with it because I'm playing games, other games I want to play. Like, I have a list. It's crazy, but awesome.
Yeah, I have a list. I have a list of games coming out that I have my eye on. So many of them, I'm happy that because of this show, I get to save some money on games, because we'll get every now and then we'll get one that I have on my list, like a bigger title. And, you know, it's cool to be able to save a couple of bucks on a game that I was interested in because we got it for review.
And weirder still, I won't say it's even better, but it's also good in the occasional moments where you get a game for review that you wanted to get, and then you're reviewing it, and you're like, this game isn't very good. Whew, glad I saved that money. Thanks. And I can tell other people about it, too. Again, thankfully, it doesn't happen as often as some people might think it does, but on those cases where it has happened, you bet your sweet bippy I'm glad I had to pay for it at that point. And it's also the point where I'm like, hey, guys, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I know everybody has their own take on things, but I didn't like this game, and I'm going to do everything in my power to explain as best as possible why I didn't like it, so that you, too, can know if this is a game that is or is not for you. Because I think that is the responsibility that we have. And it's one that is worth taking very seriously.
I take this job very seriously. I think I'm pretty serious with the show. Like, I joke around a lot that the show sucks and I'm not a fan of the host, but deep down I care about this show.
Damn Skippy, you do, because it's your baby.
Exactly. 400 and almost 80 episodes. I think this is 479.
Holy pickles. That's a good. And you figure, what was the frequency of episodes always the same? Like, two episodes a week, or was there ever a three episodes, or was there ever a one episode per week phase?
When the show started, it was one a week. And then when I started doing more developer interviews, it was kind of just, I would do the normal one every Friday, because we released them on Friday back then. And then I would do other ones whenever they were ready.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since we shifted over to the format of, like, a lot of reviews on the show, it's been, you know, one show, which is our Saturday show, is news and reviews and developer interviews when we could get them. And then the Wednesday shows are mostly reviews. Every now and then we'll have another interview that we could tack on. But these shows are generally just catching up on reviews.
That's what's up then, see?
And speaking of, should we get started on some reviews? Because there's a lot of games to talk about this episode.
There really are. Not that I'm complaining, because there's some gems in that lot.
So you ready to do this?
Let's get down to business.
All right. Well, the first game to talk about tonight is called Shakedown Hawaii, developed and published by V-Blank Entertainment, released May 7th on Switch, PS4, Vita, and PC for $19.99. Build a legitimate corporation via open world missions, shakedown, sabotage, and property acquisition. Shakedown Hawaii parodies big business and the white collar crimes that go alongside it. Purnell, tell us about Shakedown Hawaii.
So Shakedown Hawaii, for those who may not be in the know, it is the sequel to a game that was called Retro City Rampage, which I think came out in like 2012 or so. Well, it's back.
It's been a while.
Yeah, and Shakedown Hawaii has been in talks for many years as well. Like, it's just been like a game that people wanted, and it just didn't happen until it happened, which is now. So it has a lot to live up to, a lot of expectations to live up to. And the question is, does it pull it off? And I feel that while it doesn't hit it in certain spots, overall, it definitely hits the spot. It was worth the wait. So, describing the game, what is it? What'd you say?
I was going to say, so what does it do right? We'll start there.
Okay, well, Retro City Rampage was a parody-esque game of Grand Theft Auto, the classic Grand Theft Auto style, not the newer 3D one. So we're talking top-down, little tiny people running around, stealing cars, blah, blah, blah. But one big issue that I had with Retro City Rampage, though, was that while they had all these cool character customization options and these wacky little missions where you come across, like DeLoreans and weird mess like that, the character sprite models were so tiny that you couldn't make out any details of the characters that you were dealing with. It was just squatty. Like, you can go out and buy a hat or some pants in the game, you wouldn't even be able to tell. You're basically replacing a single pixel. Can't tell. There's no value in it. But in this game, all the sprites are more expressive. All the car, like basically the character models, the vehicles, the buildings, everything's more expressive. Beautiful colors. It's honestly, I'm not sure if it's because I'm an old head or what, but this game is gorgeous to look at, and it's gorgeous to see in motion too. I feel like one place where I preferred the original game though was in the story, because in this game, the plot is that you are pretty much like an old, you know, successful businessman. I want to say that you're supposed to be the main character of Retro City Rampage, but I don't know for sure. But you're basically a successful business mogul who's come to realize that his empire is going to crap on account of the fact that modern technology and modern business are taking you down. I'm talking stuff that we take for granted, like, online mail order and, illegal car rentals or like shifty car rentals, crazy stuff like that. And as a result, your company's about to go under, and you decide, screw that, not on my watch, I'm going to get my company back. And you do it by being a dick. essentially, you go around committing petty crimes and essentially taking out your competition in order to become rich and famous all over again. Well, not so much famous, but rich, loaded up, and a top dog kingpin. So what ends up happening, the gameplay flow is you will go about a series of missions, sometimes as yourself, sometimes as your son, and sometimes as one of your boys in the company. And the goal will be to do a number of things, usually falling around the lines like pick up a delivery missions or kill all the guys missions or just a number of different things, like typical like Grand Theft Auto type stuff. And honestly, it's enjoyable. It's not complicated. You're not going to come across anything life-defining or just like revolutionary in the field. But the missions themselves are enjoyable. You'll enjoy just doing them with these little characters. And what I do like about the game also is that there's very little punishment in this event of failure. This game was meant for dicking around. So, for example, you know, in a Grand Theft Auto game or also Retro City Rampage, if you do enough really bad stuff, the cops will show up and come after you, right?
Yeah.
Well, in this game, the cops will come after you too. Though, for better or worse, the cops are very easy to ditch. So you're not really truly ever at risk of, you know, going down, though I guess maybe if you get your crime level up to an absurd level, it might be harder to ditch them, but I'm a goody two-shoes in that regard. I never let it get too high, which means that if I wanted to go on a crazy crime spree, I had shaken the cops before I even got around to having it get to a high level, so I don't know. But they were very easy to ditch. Also, if you die, either by a civilian or the cops, you just get teleported to a hospital or dumpster, literally a dumpster. And from what I could tell, there's no like financial penalty. So what are some of the mission types you can do? So I've already mentioned that there's like pickup deliveries. There are kill all the enemies missions. There are, you know, find the X file or X item within the environment and take it back to a person. So I guess that's technically pickup and delivery. But there's also a weird little mission type that I don't think was in Retro City Rampage, which is called a shakedown. And what a shakedown mission is you go into a facility that you want to buy because, oh, spoiler alert, you can buy buildings and then, or you can acquire buildings and then their businesses' revenue go into your coffers or you'll get a portion of their profits to boost your empire. But you'll go into these businesses that you want to take on and you pretty much, you know, bully them into protection rackets. You go on and destroy the shop. And sometimes you might have to take out their current protection, such as like another gang that's, you know, currently offering them quote unquote protection. And then they'll offer it to you. And now you're getting a cut of their profits as well. So there are like 80 locations in the game where you can do that in. And while I admit, if you just did that the entire game, it would get old. But the idea is that you want to, you know, shake it up a little bit. Pardon my joke. Shake it up and do different missions, a little bit of variety. Or just also follow the story and see how it progresses. In the event that you don't want to just do the story mode, there are a variety of mini games littered throughout the map. Sometimes you might have like a sort of also kill all mission, but with wacky stuff. Like as far as like, you know, different requirements, like, hey, kill as many guys as possible using, you know, this weapon here. There is also like weird stuff like a go-kart store where you can drive a go-kart around and destroy everything in the store with a go-kart.
Hell yeah.
It's just wacky things that they do with the intent being to just make the game like just weird and fun. But it never reaches the level of being as weird as Retro City Rampage, which could be for better or worse. I think one thing that's interesting also is I've heard people claim that the map is much bigger than in Retro City. It's a huge map. Four times the size, whatever. So, but as far as I can tell, while the map is bigger, it's not huge. I mean, you can drive across the entire map from left to right in about like 2 minutes or so. It's not a huge map. But same time, when you take it all in for what it is, there's enough there just to give you some reason to run around and do different things. So you're not going to really be like, oh, I remember all the map areas. I've grown bored of them now, and I don't want to do this anymore. There's still little nuances on each block, various stores to go into to buy clothing, to change your disguise or costume. You can buy a wig, for example, buy different weapons. You can find a weapons truck. You can buy shoes, a coat, pants, kinds of crazy junk just to make your guy look a little different. And that goes for, again, all the characters, not just you, but the other two, not just the main character, but the other two characters you can play as well. If you don't want to play just the story mode, you can go into the main menu, which will allow you to try out arcade challenges, which is good and bad because from what I can tell, the challenges are just the challenges that you can find in the actual game. It's just you can just pull them off of a menu, so you don't have to find them on the map. Whether that's better or worse, I do not know.
It's helpful.
Yeah, it's helpful. Like if you just want to play the challenges, that's cool. I will say I kind of hate it in some of those games, like Grand Theft Autos and stuff, where I do want to do all the challenges, but I have no idea where the hell the challenge markers are. So it's kind of nice that in this game that you don't have to worry about that if you don't want to. But if you do want to, they're in the normal map too, so you can find them and play around.
That going back a little bit, you mentioned how it has a bigger map, but it's not anything like super massive or huge. Mm-hmm. I actually prefer that because I think games are getting too big. There's just too much shit to do in games. There's too much space in games. I wouldn't mind having a smaller, more compact, and easier to access map than have something six times larger and everything spread out further.
You know what? Honestly, I think I can agree with you there because it's one thing to just say, hey, our map is huge. But the problem is a lot of companies will make these huge maps. but the way they make them big is by having a lot of useless like things on the map, like events that are cookie cutter or just kind of pointless, or it'll be a lot of dead space where it's just an excuse for you to run further, but you don't do anything in the space you're running through. Whereas in this game, it's very concise. It's very tight. There's a lot of buildings all connected together within a number of city blocks. There's like a La Brea tar pits looking area and lots of water going around the island because you're on an island. It's Hawaii. Ha! Huh, who'd have thought? But as a result, there's enough to go around, I think. Especially for the fact that the game is not meant to be a massive, you know, freaking Assassin's Creed Odyssey landscape or anything like that, or yeah. Scope. It's just a wacky, fun game to drive cars and beat guys with bats. And also, I got to tell you for the record, just to state to people how weird the game can get, my favorite mission type in the game is one where you catch fire with a Molotov cocktail and you have to run around and set as many people on fire as possible before you burn out.
That's amazing.
It's just there's some weird stuff that goes on in this game. They got creative. Though I should also mention, though it's a main part of the game, I don't think of it so much in that regard, but like I said earlier, you can do the shakedowns to get buildings and businesses. But in addition to that, you can also, over time, find new businesses to flat out purchase. Like, you'll go to the main map, you'll be able to scroll around and look for businesses like, hey, this building is available to be purchased. And you can pay the money for that, which will add revenue to your company, but you could also sometimes like get side missions for it. And an early example is, remember I mentioned earlier how you could get how one of your competitors is like, you know, used cars or leasing of cars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can get in on that and say, you know what? No, I want to buy a used car business. So you can go on the main map, select the used car business that shows up, purchase it. And now, not only are you getting revenue from that business, but you can take on side missions where your job is to go around and repossess cars.
Sweet.
So, and there's other areas like that, too, where it results in like new missions you can do once you get the building. And then you can upgrade the building location so they'll generate more revenue for you and unlock other buildings that you can purchase. So, if you really get into the scope of the game, you can get pretty obsessed with the idea of, you know, boosting businesses to increase your income so you can take that money to buy new weapons or buy new buildings to increase your revenue further and just go down the rabbit hole of revenue increase till the cows come home.
Works for me.
It should. It's a good game.
Well, then $20 on it, what do you say?
I think Shakedown Hawaii shook me down, and I am happy for it. I had to do it, but it is a great game. I do believe it is a very worthy successor to Retro City Rampage, and it fixed a number of things about that game that originally made me not as happy. So I would say this is a solid buy.
I do have one major gripe about the game that I hope gets addressed.
No! What's the gripe?
It's not on Xbox One. It's on everything
Wait,
else.
What?
It's not on Xbox One.
And I know Retro City Rampage was.
It was on 360.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, it was still on there. So, yeah, but it didn't make Xbox One, though?
Nope, no Shakedown Hawaii on Xbox One.
Hopefully they changed that.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I don't know the reasoning why. I don't know if V-Blank just doesn't like Xbox, but it would be nice if everybody got to play the game, since damn near everyone has it the way it is. It's just that, you know, the Xbox crowd is still missing out.
Yeah,
I mean, it's on the Vita, for Christ's sakes. You could release it on Xbox if you put it on the Vita.
That is true. I've actually seen a number of people that said that were describing it as though it is like the final Vita game. So collectors are kind of going bonkers for the physical copies that are out there.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Yeah, I played a bit of it on the Epic Store, and I was really, really enjoying what I played. I'm sure this is going to be one that people are annoyed with, the whole Epic Store thing, but I don't know.
Is it Epic Store exclusive?
I don't know. I should look that up quick.
Epic. Yeah, buddy. I don't understand that whole thing, but I guess there's a reason behind it, I suppose, having... Oh, I guess that's it. I mean, it's just like the console wars, I guess. They want to become the go-to spot for digital game purchases, so they're like, hey, come here. You can only buy it here, and if you eventually get people to build up a library of games on that service, it might be less incentive for people to boot up the other service to play on there, which is also the hard part. I think it's the large part of why it's so hard to take down Steam, because Steam has been the only game in town for, well, the only real game in town in that regard. I think there's like GOG, but most people go to Steam. So it was like most people have these massive collections on Steam now, and the odds of getting them to leave for another service, very difficult. So
no, well, people will not be able to buy Shakedown Hawaii on Steam, at least for now. So it is, it looks like it's only on the Epic Store right now. So if you got $20 and you want to on Epic Store, go for it.
It'll be worth your while if you want to use the Epic Store. Otherwise, yeah, hold up or get it on a console.
Get it on Switch.
Yo, buddy. I do like everything on the Switch has become the thing.
It has.
I'm a Switch sucker.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Super Space Serpent SE, developed by Petrus Games, published by Productions Associates. Released May 10th on Xbox One for $9.99. Super Space Serpent Secondary Edition is a game that is inspired by the good old arcade games. You're in control of the prototype spaceship Serpent, move through the different levels of the multiverse to defend our universe against the evil invaders. Brunel, tell us about Super Space Serpent SE.
Well, you just told me something about Super Space Serpent SE, so go figure that. I was going to ask, where the hell's the name come from? And unless you're listening to the show, people who purchase it won't know either.
Well, if they look at the title screen, I'm pretty sure it says Secondary Edition.
No, I mean, why it's called Space Serpent. Like, what's the serpent? It's the ship, like you said.
I thought you were talking about the SE.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean specifically Space Serpent. Oh,
okay.
There's no, I mean, maybe like the final boss is a Space Serpent. But I can tell you right now, general enemy-wise, the closest you're going to get to a serpent is like a sequence of circles flying around the screen. But no serpents, man. Let me tell you that. Anyway, I digress. What the hell is this game? Well, let me think. Think Geometry Wars without geometric shapes, and you have this game. To an extent. Because what happens is there's only one mode, which is by pressing start, it begins. Twin stick shooter, where when you start it, the game will start out on stage one with a 100-second timer. At that time, there is an enemy dispensing unit that will slowly release enemies onto the screen that you have to, in turn, kill. Sometimes enemies won't just come from the dispensers, though. They might just come from, like, the size of the screen or maybe even just appearing in the screen. Why I couldn't tell you for sure, I'll get to that in a second. But ultimately, you just have to kill these things as quickly as possible to keep them from overflowing the screen and giving you a lot of grief. Because unfortunately, that's the game. You have to last the whole 100 seconds in order to move on to the next stage. This isn't one of those kill every enemy to move on games. It's just don't freaking die. Though, you'll want to kill as much as possible, aside from just holding your life and, you know, keeping your life together, but also for points. Because the way you get points is by killing enemies and by maintaining a decent combo as you kill enemies for them to actually, you know, build up a multiplier so that your score shows for it. Now, as a result of that, after you finish the level for the 100 seconds, you'll move on to the next level, new dispensers will show up, and sometimes new enemies will even show up on the screen, too. Now, it's weird because there aren't too many things in the form of power-ups in this game, but what does show up in the game is that there are health pickups, which means sometimes a heart will fall from the top of the screen, and if you can catch it, you'll get 50 hit points. 50 hit points. Yeah, I probably should clarify that too. Start with 100 hit points. Every hit you take drops you by 50. So I don't know why they went with that size of numerics when they could have just said 1, 2, 3, but whatever. 100 hit points is 2 hits and you die. But if you get a heart, you'll get another 50 hit points to take another hit. In addition, sometimes you'll see a sort of like, it's almost like a shiny guitar pick. I don't know how to describe it. When you pick it up, though, it will result in generating a medical plus symbol, which will fly up the screen. And if you can catch that, you'll get a massive hit point boost, which will allow you to take on even more damage. And last but not least in the power-up spectrum, there is moments in the game where a large square with a constantly changing number going between 1 through 9 will fall down the screen. And depending on when you pick it up and what number is displayed, that will determine what power-up or power-down you get. Sometimes you'll get a triple gun. Sometimes you'll get a weird, again, moment where, like, the screen will kind of shift slightly to the right, which will mess with your vision, and so on and so forth. Or sometimes you'll get, like a thing where it just make the entire screen, like, blue. I don't know why. I guess it's meant to make it more difficult in that way. I don't know. Because it's weird to say that because the game's already weirdly difficult because of the color of the screen. What do I mean, simple? Remember I mentioned that I can't quite explain where all the enemies always come from?
Yeah.
Well, that is because one of the particular enemies in the game screws with you because it is purple.
And the background is purple.
Yep. So what ends up happening is I'm dodging crap, and out of nowhere, I just take a hit. And I'm like, what the hell hit me? Oh, yep. Purple dot. Like, come on, purple dot. What the hell is this crap? So now you're squinting to see the purple dots that blend in with the purple background. And that's freaking annoying. And also, some of the enemies are also just really tiny. So you have to be well aware of your surroundings beyond the usual scope of games like this to make sure you don't take, you know, just kind of loser hits. Now, does this ruin the game? No, I don't think it does. The game itself is actually still very enjoyable. If you like games like Geometry Wars, you're not going to feel like this game is stupid. You might find one to be better than the other, which goes with, you know, any type of, you know, game that is similar to another game.
Oh, yeah.
But the enjoyment factor is still there. I was still going for high scores. I was still interested in seeing what new bosses would pop up, because every few levels a boss will appear who you have to then murder profusely. But it's just a matter of surviving to get there. When you die, you set a high score. You come back, you can try again. There's nothing else to the game beyond that. Worth mentioning, though, is that the music in this game is very, very good. I found myself very much enjoying the music. You are able to use it. There's a music player option in the intro of the screen. So you can go on the intro screen on the title screen or the main menu. There's the word. And you're allowed to use that to go and just kind of listen to the music as you see fit if you find yourself enjoying it, which I did. So I was doing that here and there.
Yeah, I love when games have music player options.
I think every game should. I mean, truth be told, game music is extremely important. If you don't have good game music, I think that takes a lot of points off the game. And by that same token, if you do have good game music, you should give players the option to listen to it within the game, because you buy the game, you kind of bought the music too. Not ownership of it per se, but it means to listen to it.
Yeah.
You know? So give us the option to listen to music of the game. So thank you, Super Serpent, for slapping a music player option in this bad boy.
Nice.
Nova Nice? Super Nice? Super Serpent SE Nice?
Well, $10 on Super Space Serpent SE. What do you think of it?
I think it is honestly also, I want to go with a try it. I could say buy it, but I think try it more so in the... Well, I can go with buy it. Buy it if you have enjoyed games like Geometry Wars and you are okay with... Or Robotron. That's another one. Or Robotron. You're a fan of games like Robotron or Geometry Wars and you're okay with another entry to the pool that does a great job of paying homage to those two games.
Awesome.
Super! I'll keep doing that.
I will. I bet you will.
Super?
I don't know how to transition. I'm sure you figure that out by now.
Serpent.
Speaking of dicks.
Well then, there's your transition.
That's Cole's favorite transition.
Speaking of dicks. Dicks.
Hear that, or when she's done, she'll just yell next. Cause I never know if you have more to say about a game or not.
That's true. Well, in the case of this one though, at least, like I said, it's fairly solid. Like, it's a done deal with this bad boy. Like, it's not a ton of game, but it's a good game. The game you get is good.
Yeah, what's there is good. I had a lot of fun with it as well. I'm not as good at Twin Sticks as some people, so my high score pales in comparison to some of them on the top of the leaderboards, but it's a fun game. I had a lot of fun with it.
I don't trust leaderboards. You know, there's probably some jerk out there who's screwing the system somehow.
Cheaters.
Mm-hmm.
Filthy cheaters.
Which, by the way, I don't even understand why people get a joy out of it. What is the value of cheating a high score system? Like, hey, look at me, I got the top score. Yeah, but it's not real. It's fake. Yeah, but I'm on it. It's not real. If it's not a score you earned, where's the joy of having it?
Some people are just dicks.
Hear, hear to that shit. That's why the lesson's always don't be a dick.
Be a dick. Speaking of dicks, quack, quack. Last game that you're here to talk about this week is called For the King, developed by Iron Oak Games, published by Curve Digital, released May 10th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $24.99, on Steam for $19.99. For the King is a strategic RPG that blends tabletop and roguelike elements in a challenging adventure that spans the realms. Set off on a single-player experience or play cooperatively, both online and locally, none before you have returned from their journey, will you put an end to the chaos? Purnell, did you put an end to the chaos?
I'd like to think I did in some parallel universe, but not this one. The SML multiverse, somewhere I pulled it off. But unfortunately, there was none done here. But that's okay, because as the game tells you at the very beginning, you will die, and that's okay, because you're meant to. That's how the game is designed. And worth pointing out, I know it's kind of a spoiler for the review as a whole, but I got to say it early on. When this week kicked in, I was really excited for Shakedown Hawaii, and I was expecting that to be like the game I was most happy to review throughout the week. But this unexpected gem kicked the crap out of everything else. This game is solid, man. This is really, really good. What the hell am I talking about? Let's get into it then. So, this game has a number of modes, but I'm going to describe the one that gives the game its namesake, For the King. In which case, you are on a quest from the Queen to figure out what happened. Basically, I don't even remember, because I sucked at the damn mission description. Basically, you're helping the Queen do some crap, and it usually involves you, you know, going across a series of missions that she bestows upon you. Now, you might be thinking, how can you like the game so much if you barely care about the plot? Well, here we go. So, the game, the map, well, the locations on the map are static. Like, the places that exist on the map are static, like story level stuff. So, you always seem to start in a town called Oakton, for example. And there's always a Glimmerstone Mine or whatever, for example. However, the map layout, where these places are, where the water is even, is always randomized. So, the pursuit, like where you go, the place will be the same, but where that place is will not always be the same. And that actually adds a lot of value to this game, because again, it plays like a tabletop roguelike, and a lot of tabletop RPGs are built exactly that way. All the locations are the same, but you usually shuffle the tiles and then throw them on the table. So now you're going to the same places, but you don't know where they are. You got to find them, or you just have to plan a different route. So this does a good job of simulating that in a video form. In addition to that, even though I mentioned earlier that the Queen's missions are always the same, there are missions within the different towns that you can take on that will be different. And that ends up being a way for you to generate revenue for your characters. But I should go into the characters themselves. So when you choose,
a lot to go into on this one.
Yeah, but in a good way. This is a solid title. When you start the game off, if you're playing by yourself, you have to choose three characters. And those characters, or you choose their gender, some very generic like looks for them, and like their class. And the classes all come with like various starting like skills that they'll have throughout the game. Like, so, like there's one guy, like there's a blacksmith who starts the game with a hammer, and he has he does high damage, and he has like a whacking skill. There's another character who generates focus on every turn, can generate focus on each turn. What is focus? I'll get to that in a minute. And so on and so forth. And when you choose these three characters and say go, they spawn you in Oakton, give you your first quest, and you're good to go. Turns consist of not moving your entire party at once, but actually moving your party one person at a time. You see, even though you're controlling everybody, they are all their own entities, which means they have their own inventories, their own stats, and everything of the sort. And on each turn, what the game will do is it will roll some virtual dice, which essentially are these little tokens that determine what your movement range will be. There's a maximum typically of 5 that I've noticed, but you won't always get that because the roll can be bad.
Yeah.
And then once you get that, you will then move your guy where you need to go. So if you go to a town, you will have options to do like to go to an inn to heal yourself, take a nap. You can go to the pub to take on a quest. And what the pub will offer is like 4 different quests, but once you choose one of those quests, the others are unavailable. So you can't like just hog a bunch of quests and just sit there and just farm for money and stuff like that. So, and there's also stores where you can buy equipment like new weapons, new armor, and all those things come with their own. Honestly, I like the equipment system in this game. Now I mentioned it. I should say that. So when you buy equipment in the game, every weapon comes with skills, like different attacks. So you might find one bow that gives you the piercing shot, which if you roll, well, I'll go into the attack types in a second too, but specifically, you can get the piercing shot, which will allow you to do damage that ignores enemy armor. Or you might get another bow that gives you speed damage, like a slowing shot, where if you hit the enemy, their speed will slow down and their order in the turn will go down. So it'll take them longer to get a turn. So what I mean to say now is, like, you get this equipment, you purchase it, you wear it, whatever. But when do you use equipment? Well, in fights, obviously. And how do you get into fights? They're on the map. You'll see enemies sometimes, and other times they might be hidden in fog of war, because also the map is revealed as you walk out into the world. You don't just see the entire map. You have to reveal it as you explore. And if you come across an enemy on the map, you have a few options. One, you can say fight. If you choose fight, every enemy within a certain hex radius will be brought into the fight. So you run into one guy, but he's flanked by two other guys. And I think it maxes out at three. I've only ever had a max of three enemies in one fight at a time. But he's flanked by two guys, each two tiles away. They'll be brought into the fight, and now you have to fight all three of the guys. By that same token, if your guys are within a set number of tiles away from your character, the guy who initiated the fight, they will also join in to kick ass. In the event that you, however, don't want to bring in the other enemies, you have the option to select an ambush. And if you choose ambush, depending on your character's stat, they will technically roll to see if they can actually pull off the ambush, which will result in you only having to fight the one guy you walked into.
That's cool.
And you can also retreat, which, you know what that means, just walk away, don't fight anybody. And you can sneak past them, which means you can go through the tile they're on and not encounter them at all. Again, another roll challenge. You might fail and get screwed in the shuffle. But despite whatever happens, if you will eventually get into a fight. You get into a fight, it's turn-based, and every attack that you can pull off has to be rolled for. So you'll have a piece of equipment. Say, let's say that thing I mentioned, the blacksmith's hammer that I mentioned earlier, right?
The whacking skill.
That's right.
I have a whacking skill too. It's completely different.
That's right. Because, you know, flies are annoying, so you have to kill them, you know, to keep your house from feeling cluttered with annoying flying buzzing insects.
Exactly.
But I digress.
Exactly.
You know it. Yeah, man. So let's take over the blacksmith. He has a hammer. And he starts out with two skills, one called Smash. And Smash is, it does like a base amount of damage to an enemy. And if he swings the hammer, it will roll, it'll do like a roll check. It'll mention on the weapon, or rather the skill, that Smash has a 3 strength check. And your strength, let's say your strength stat is 70. What that means is that you have a 70% chance of clearing each of those rolls. So 3 rolls, each at 70%. And depending on how many of those you get, determines how effective the attack will be. In addition to that, he has another skill called like Shockwave. And what happens there is it has a base damage output, which also involves a roll. But if you get a perfect roll, as in everything comes up Milhouse, you will actually do a bonus effect, which will spread the damage to all the flanked enemies. So there's a lot of times where you're like, man, I really, really need to get this perfect roll. I hope I get it. And sometimes you'll be like, crap, I didn't get it. I am fucked. Because sometimes you'll get a really bad roll and you'll just whiff entirely. So the game does offer one concession to make it a little easier sometimes, and that's the focus gauge. Every character has focus tokens that are above their icon or their status bar on the battle screen. You're allowed to spend focus points to guarantee one roll successful. So if you have that spread damage attack and you really need this bad boy to connect, if you're sitting on 4 focus, you can guarantee it by spending all 4 focus. But now you're out of focus.
Yeah.
Or you can spend 2 to increase the odds, because now instead of having to get four perfect rolls, you only need to get two perfect rolls or two good rolls. So you increase your odds by spending some focus. It's a risk and reward system, because you might spend the focus and just screw it up. It's like, well, it was a nice try, but I don't have any more focus left, and I just used it on a roll that did not take. But then again, that's kind of the meat and potatoes of the board game roguelike tabletop scenario. Not everything's going to go the way you want it to go. And that's the beauty of this game. The fact that you cannot necessarily predict everything. You can play as best you can, and you can be skilled at it, just like in a good board game, just like in a good D&D session. But you'll never be perfect, and you will screw up. And if you think that the surface exploration is one thing for succeeding or failing, oh man, the challenge really ramps up when you find a dungeon. Because dungeons are brutal. When you go into a dungeon, they are multi-floor sections where you have to go. There's no exploration. Like, you're not running around the map or anything. You just go into a sequence of battles. Battle after battle after battle after battle. And you have to win them all. Because if you lose any of them, you die and your game is over. Just like that. So don't fuck up. But in addition to like straight up battles, sometimes you'll come across events. Like, you might come across a door you have to open, and then the game will offer you a stat check where it'll say, hey, it requires a heavy strength character to open this door. And if these are the odds of you succeeding or failing, and what the failure will be if you screw it up. So you'll be like, which of my characters is best suited to perform this task? Sometimes you'll even just have an item that says, screw it, I don't want to do it. Like, one time I did a dungeon, found a lockpick, and when I came across the door, it said, you want to try to bash it open? There's a risk of causing a cave-in and taking damage. It's like, no, I got a lockpick, screw that. And I just unlocked the door. The lockpick went away, but I also didn't run a risk of taking damage inside of a already dangerous location. And a couple times I've even come across, like, shopkeepers where you'll be able to shop within the dungeon. And at this particular time, I really needed it because I was out of healing herb and I was coming up on the boss of the dungeon and I was going to get wrecked. So I bought some herb and healed up and kicked the boss's ass. So
I wish I could buy some herb.
Oh, you laws of effect. This might happen soon. You never know. The world is changing. Buy some herb, you monster. And by monster, I mean you laid back individual.
Yeah, man. That's great. So crazy, man.
And I think I got to mention one important thing, and then there's like another set of options worth describing. So
let's hear it.
In addition to all the stuff I described, while you're trying to explore the game, this game is not designed for you to be able to leisurely stroll around the map, taking your sweet-ass time to do whatever. Why is that? Because there's chaos afoot, baby. And chaos is bad. What the hell is that? Well, there's a day and night cycle that takes place in the game. And as you take a turn for all three characters each day, one of those cycles will go away. So it might be like 6 turns total, and then you'll go into night, and 9 is 5 turns, and then so on and so forth. At night, stronger enemies will show up, and it will be harder to get around. So you'll have to be smarter when you're running around at night. But in addition to that, chaos is a stat that will result in generating events on that time bar. Bad events. Every single one is bad. And you don't want them. Ever. And the only way to get rid of these bad, shitty chaos events... Yeah, I cursed. That's the deal, baby. To get rid of them, you have to fulfill queen objectives and also occasionally come across something called a chaos generator out in the wild and destroy it, which also requires a stat check. But if you can get rid of them, you'll keep the chaos at bay. If you complete missions or get rid of chaos generators, you'll keep chaos at bay. If you cannot do that, it will start to stack. Things will get worse and worse until eventually a monster is stalking you on the map with intent to freaking murder you.
Oh,
it
God.
Is bad. It gets real bad. Don't fuck up chaos, because it ain't worth it unless you just kind of want to be, you know, err on the outside of chaos, in which case, hey, wacky times for a good time. But it is an interesting mechanic they put in there with the intent to make you, you know, be smart about using your time without just kind of dawdling. And here's where it gets interesting, too. So, like, I'm not sure how the original game was designed or if it was always like this, but For the King is not the only mode in this game. There are also 2 other story-type missions where you're exploring a frosty region, which comes with its own dangers, such as every time you're out in the cold and you stay and you're not in a town at the end of your turn, you take a little bit of damage. So you got to be smart about how you choose how to get around the map. There is another mission type where you have to just go down to a dungeon and try to kill this guy named like Hogred or something like that. There's a dungeon rush mode where the map is just an open world, but the goal is to go and take out 5 really difficult dungeons. Then there's like a few other modes too. One of which is specifically tailored towards multiplayer, which I think sounds really cool, especially if you were someone who liked games like Zelda Four Swords Adventures, because the idea is that you are trying to make the most money, and most, I think it's like 100 or 200 gold coins you're trying to get before the other players and deliver the money to an NPC. So that means you have all the different players not working together unless they both need to mutually benefit. So there's some negotiation there.
Nice.
As you're trying to fight for money to beat everyone else to the punch. You can play it online or locally, too. So that's also great. Get your friends to buy this game. Set up some playtime sessions. There is honestly... Oh, and there's one more thing. I'm like that guy from Jackie Chan Adventures.
But wait, there's more.
There's more. If you also die now... you'll get lore points. What the hell is lore points? So sometimes you complete missions, you'll get these books called lore, because that's what lore is. Lore is documentation, stories. And as you accrue lore and you die or not, you can go to the main menu and go to the lore store. In the lore store, you can make a variety of different purchases. You can buy new locations that can randomly show up on the map, thereby altering how your adventures can play out. You can purchase new character classes, which means they'll come with new skills, and you can better or further customize your party. There's like 10 different classes you can purchase. There are new monsters, there's new equipment you can buy. It's a lot of cool stuff that you can just shop for on a whim and then just add them to your game. And you get the lore by just playing the game. So it's almost like I'm trying to think, it's like, what was the last game I played where you had to earn coins to buy unlocks? Maybe Mario Party 1. I don't freaking know. But I honestly think that is an excellent aspect to the game. I like the fact that you can further tweak the adventures. Because when you really lay it on the table, and the thing I mentioned earlier about the why I was like, I'm not all that concerned about saving the queen, the kingdom. I don't care about what the queen wants. Is that I think the meat and potatoes of this game is not so much fulfilling the story quest. It's just going on a quest. Going out and seeing how will this run turn out. What will I experience? Oh, crap, we got our asses kicked by this monster. We didn't see him coming. We got ambushed in the woods. We lost here. Oh, that sucks, but it was a great run. Or you might go, hey, I killed this monster, got this really rare armor, and it gave me these cool perks, which made the rest of the adventure a lot smoother. It's a lot of fun. And worth mentioning as well is the fact that there are various difficulties. And each difficulty you select determines how the game will play. You might be able to earn more lore quicker, which means it'll be easier to unlock stuff. But in exchange for earning more lore, the game is just genuinely harder. So you'll be working harder to win. You might have a difficulty mode where you have no lives, which means if a character dies, you cannot resurrect them. Because sometimes you can resurrect a character if you have lives left. But if you have no lives, the game is straight up over. And it's like, whoops, I didn't have a chance to try. But again, the lore is worth getting there. This game, it's glorious. I'm in love with this game. The only downside for me, and this is a genuine, I swear this is a nitpick on top of nitpicks, is the fact that the music puts me to sleep. It's not that it's bad. It's that it's going for that whole, you know, the generic Western RPG sound, like do 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 do, cause I am playing a lute or something or whatever. And it just does that for everything. The dungeon music is cool though, and the boss music is cool, and even some of the battle music is okay, even though it's still more of that type of sound as well. But it'd have been nice if there was like more, if it was more lively music and wasn't going for that exact theme, but. Again, that's a nitpick. It doesn't ruin the game. A lot of people won't even use the music. They'll probably play, like, I don't know, Soundgarden. God, I'm old! They'll play Soundgarden over their gameplay session or whatever. But in the end, whether you're going to listen to the music or not listen to the music, it does not change the fact that this game is a sweet freaking deal and a complete and utter surprise that I did not expect to come down the pike. This is the kind of game I like to see, and I want to see more games like it. It is so freaking awesome. it makes me honestly put blank, put in perspective. I want to go to Board Game Geek in the Dice Tower Facebook groups and be like, yo, I've been playing this video game called For the King. You guys might want to start, want to look into this instead of buying digital versions of board games you already have in your closet. Buy this game. This is what you should be paying for. You know,
well, do I even need to ask $25 on this one? What do you say?
I deny it. This game is a piece of shit. total buy. This game is a solid, solid buy. Though I have to say it is on the condition that you at least have an aptitude interest for like a tabletop game that handles all of, like, the bits and pieces for you. That's kind of what it is. You know, it's a visual tabletop game that is awesome. But if you're looking for like the next Final Fantasy or some crap, or like, I want to play, you know, an NES RPG, this looks like it, you're looking in the wrong direction. But this game, in my opinion, is such a solid freaking buy. Even if it's not in your typical wheelhouse, give it a freaking try. You might be surprised, especially if you can get your friends in on it. In which case, I think each one of them will control a character. So
nice. Like,
it's worth it. It's so good. It's nice. A good game. It's good. It's for the king.
Pernell, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on?
If you go to the gym, make sure to eat protein or some sort of food before you go. Your body needs fuel to function, and if you do not have fuel before you function, you might pee or puke, and then everyone will laugh at you, and you'll wonder how you got into the situation, and that dumb monologue will show up where the guy goes, you might wonder how I got into the situation, but it won't even be your voice. It'll be someone else's voice. You won't know why, but it'll happen, and then things get real chaotic as you go into a flashback of your worst nightmare and embarrassing situation, and it's just not cool. And ultimately, it'll still turn, you still peed yourself. No one wants that. Eat before you go to the gym. It's worth it.
All right. Next bit of business to take care of. We have an email review from Dark Mika. She is checking out A Plague Tale Innocence, developed by Asobo Studio, published by Focus Home Interactive, released May 14th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $49.99. A Plague Tale Innocence blends action, adventure, and stealth. Follow a protagonist, Amicia, and her little brother Hugo, both orphans and on the run from the terrifying Inquisition. Our young heroes will also need to do... Oh my god, why can't I talk? What is wrong with me? Our young heroes will also need to survive against an even greater danger, supernatural swarms of rats that appeared with the Great Plague infecting across cities and countryside. Again, Dark Mika wrote in a review, this is what she has to say, and hopefully I could get through this one without stumbling too much, but anyway. A Plague Tale Innocence is a stealthy puzzle action game. You'll mostly play as Amicia, I hope I'm saying that right, by the way, Amicia, with some minor control over a few other side characters that she interacts with. It takes place during the second bubonic plague pandemic in 1349 France. For those who are like, okay, and... That's the plague that wiped out a third of the population in Europe, just dropping a knowledge bomb on you. During this, the Inquisition still exists, you know, the guys who kill people under the order of the church. You heard of the Spanish Inquisition, they're all assholes and they're all the same. The Grand Inquisitor, the guy who leads the Inquisition, has decided that Amicia's brother Hugo is the cause of it, so he sends the Inquisition to your house to kill everyone and bring Hugo with him, and that they do. You escape with Hugo under your mother's orders, and the story begins as you try to escape from the Inquisition and figure out how to help your brother since he's sick. The game is based mostly on stealth. Enemies, no matter what kind, can kill you in a single hit. Arrows and spears obviously go right into you and you fall to your death. Guys with swords, staves, and mauls will knock you down and stab you. Though you do have a weapon of self-defense, if you do fuck up the stealth, you have a sling, and boy oh boy, does it fucking work. Also, the plague rats want to eat you, and they will swarm you and kill you almost immediately, so yeah, enjoy. As you progress through the game, you can also acquire materials that let you craft or upgrade your outfit, sling, and throwable items. Throwables are all tonics that you make and can have various effects. They use materials that you find just like upgrades. You get them through story progression. They're fairly fun and highly useful, but I was trying to hoard materials and kill as few people as possible, so I never tried to use them if I didn't have to. And future note for all of you, hoarding this shit is not necessary. Oh boy, Dark Mika, what are we going to do with you? Then again, I have that problem too. Anytime that I'm you know, playing RPGs or something, I will always hoard items. Like in the early Final Fantasies, I would never use an elixir. I save those for important instances, and I never, I was stupid. Anyway, back to A Plague Tale: Innocence. The characters' AIs are all fairly simple. You alert a guard and hide, and they'll search around a while walking about looking for you. The ally AI is just like Amicia, one hit and they're dead, and they behave accordingly by nearly always crouching and sticking to Amicia like glue. You can tell them to stay or follow by using down on the D-pad, and some of the allies have an ability they can use which is up on the D-pad. Had great voice acting in both English and French. I didn't listen to the German one, however the subtitles, especially at the start, moved way too fast, which is why I know I like the English voice acting, as I was planning originally to play in French, but the subtitles were too quick. The music is really good too. Every piece has feeling and gives a good sense of the emotion of the characters and the ambience of the location really well. There's some cosmetic DLC, which was included with the review copy for me. It gives players a choice of a few different coat of arms for the character's family, which also changes the look of the clothing Amicia and Hugo both wear. It doesn't do anything else, it's not necessary, but if you like the game and want to give them a little bit more support, it'll be nice to, little thing to buy and give them some more cash. The game is the same level of beauty and length as Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice was. It's another one that is going to rank fairly high up there for me, even though it's a moderately short game. I beat it in 2 gaming sessions, but my gaming sessions are like 8 to 14 hours each, so yeah, I play more than the average. You're looking at about 10 to 20 hour game, depending on whether you care to upgrade everything, look for collectibles, or just running through. For $50, though, that's really pushing it for me. I think 30 would have been like a gold mine for it, even 40 wouldn't have been doable. But 50, I feel, is just a bit too much for a game that you should be able to complete so quickly. There's not a great deal of replayability since nothing changes in the levels. I mean, you can choose to kill everyone or not to kill them, which I guess might net you achievements, but they weren't active yet when I played the game, and that's it. I suggest waiting for a little bit of a sale, maybe 10 to 20% off, then buy it. But only if you really like stealth games, because if you don't like stealth, you will probably hate this game. Oh boy, it sounds good though. Pardon me. I'm looking forward to playing this one myself. I could use a little more stealth in games. I think we need some more stealth. I would like to see Tenchu come back, maybe. I don't know. Anyway. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Lovecraft's Untold Stories, developed by Blini Games, published by Badland Games, released May 10th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Lovecraft's Untold Stories is an action roguelite with RPG elements. Explore randomly generated levels in Lovecraft stories, fight cultists and all kinds of monsters from the mythos, improve your gear, solve puzzles, and find clues and knowledge to defeat the great old ones. Checking this one out. Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
Well, if I hadn't pulled a muscle in my back about 40 minutes ago while emptying out the diaper genie, I think I'd be doing a lot better.
Proud of you. Very proud of you.
Thank you. Tonight's trash night, so you know I had to empty out all those poopy diapers.
Yay.
They kind of stink. And I mean, and since tonight's trash night for you too, you know, you have to empty out your poopy diapers.
I was going to make a poopy diaper joke about you. You beat me to it.
Like that.
No, neither of us are quick. What are you talking about?
It's true. We're fat as shit.
Yeah, and slow. How's Lovecraft's Untold Stories?
It's interesting. Because, like, I know when we initially talked about it, I wasn't exactly, like, thrilled with it, but the game is growing on me. So, like, as the review says, it's an action roguelite with, I don't know, they say randomized levels, and I don't know how much of that's actually randomized, because it seems like the maps were fairly similar, like, every single time that I died. However, it, like, the loot pickups were definitely randomized, which when I first played it, I didn't realize that, you know, each playthrough is going to be a little bit different and stuff like that. And so, like, the very first time I played through, you know, I was collecting all this loot, and then I died from an exploding box, which, by the way, I didn't know was going to explode. And the game doesn't telegraph that kind of stuff. You just have to, like, oh, well, you're dead. Uh-huh. Yeah, like, so...
As you die in the background...
I know. It wouldn't be Lovecraft without, you know, somebody choking on their own, like, you know, spittle from the Elder Gods or some crap. Anyway, spittle from the Elder Gods. It sounds like a weird fetish, like, novel.
It's anyway,
not. To be honest, I don't know. But we should write it. Therefore, we can, you know, claim it. Anyway, so the game, first off, takes patience, which if you're playing at, you know, midnight with very little sleep and you get annoyed by, like, if you would get annoyed by the old Resident Evil games, you're going to get annoyed by this. So you definitely have to be going in there, you know, with the general idea of what to expect, you know, understand you're going to die a lot. And also, you know, just the game is not going to hand everything to you, nor is it going to explain everything. There's going to be a lot of trial and error. So patience is really key with this game.
That's kind of how things are with roguelites anyways. There's going to be a lot of dying, a lot of trial and error.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly haven't had a lot of experience with roguelites. I mean, I think the last one that I paid a lot of attention to was Torchlight, like way back in the day.
Mm.
I used to be addicted to that on Xbox 360. But with this one, it's just like you start off as a detective, and you're going through this courtyard. And you find out, oh, well, the game tells you, oh, well, you can bash boxes and, you know, you can find stuff in them and all this other kind of stuff. And so I'm going around bashing boxes, and all of a sudden one of them explodes and, like, my corpse gets blown halfway across the courtyard. And then it's like, you've died. End of game. Would you like to restart? And it's like, fuck you. honestly, it reminded me of, like the original Super Mario 2, where it's just like, oh, it's a mushroom. Oh my God, I'm dead. What the fuck? and so, like, the next time that you play through the game, you're like, all right, what the fuck made that box look different? And then, like, you realize it's barely colored, slightly more red. And so you now know to look out for these red boxes up until the next time that you get killed by one, which is, like, you know, 5 feet away from where you died last time. So then I just ended up coming up with the solution of just shooting everything in the courtyard, which made heck of a lot, you know, that made everything heck of a lot easier. and then, so you go through the game, like, you're collecting clues as to, like, you know, over various mysteries, like, oh, why did my friend die? Where does this go? There's bosses which do prevent, like, they do have a bit of challenge with them. And it's not just as simple as, oh, well, I'm just going to run and shoot everything or fire, you know, my flames at them. Cause there is, like, she's not like a gypsy woman, but it's like, she's like I guess a sorceress. I forget what the game actually calls her. But, you know, it's everybody has their own powers. So you just move through the game and everything's kind of connected. And yeah, I mean, I think it's got plenty going for it. I wish it spelled everything out a little bit more. But I think for $15, I actually didn't know how much it cost until you just said it right now. And I'm just like, oh, wow, for $15, that's actually like, this game's quite the steal.
You know, you can ask me those questions before the show.
That means I have to talk to you.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I'd really... No.
Well, I mean, if you look at it in a certain way, I'm technically your boss right now. So you're talking to me anyway.
I guess you're my boss.
Damn right I am.
I mean, probably the only time you'll ever be anybody's boss, but, you know.
Hey, it's my one thing in life. Let me enjoy it. But yeah, overall, $15 on Lovecraft's Untold Stories. What do you say?
Heck yeah, totally go for it. I mean, as I said before, patience is key with this game. And it's pixel, like, it's not, it's not exactly pixel art. I don't know how you define it. Like, I don't even know like how you describe it. It's like halfway between, like, it's more like 16-bit graphics. Like, it's Super Nintendo quality graphics.
So it's still pixel graphics.
I guess, but usually when I hear pixel graphics, I think of like NES. You know what I mean? All right, so it's pixel graphics, whatever. But, you know, all right, so it's like you're not paying for like the latest Castlevania games or like the latest Resident Evil games kind of stuff. You know, you're still playing with pixel graphics, so it has that nice retro feel to it. But yeah, for $15, wow, like that's a steal and that's an automatic buy, honestly. Awesome. That's not even, yeah, like, because you know what a cheapskate I am.
Yeah, you're a cheap bastard.
Yeah, I really am a cheap bastard. So, yeah, like, this is one of the few games that I, on this podcast, have actually said go off and buy it immediately.
Damn, that is high praise from you.
Yeah, especially for a game that, you know, made me that frustrated. But, you know, if you're willing to put in the time to it, I think it's a pretty rewarding game.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, Jacob, always good having you on the show talking about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts?
I really ought to think about that kind of stuff before I hop on the show. Kind of like you were like, hey, you should ask what prices are. Yeah, I never really come up with any like final words right off the cuff. Damn it.
All right, moving on. We got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, going all right.
How was your weekend?
it was pretty good. Went and visited my mom for Mother's Day and saw Detective Pikachu.
How was it?
It was good and not at all freaky. we got there too late for the previews, but apparently they had that Sonic the Hedgehog preview in there, and the audience was just laughing throughout.
Oh, through God.
So if you go to see that movie in the theaters, make sure to get there early enough to catch the Sonic trailer and laugh with a room full of children.
Before it's changed forever.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think it's going to turn out good.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to see it either way because I'm interested. I'm interested in if they made it good, and I'm even more interested if they kept it bad. So that's where I'm at on this.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, should we get down to business?
Yeah, let's talk about video games. That's the thing that we do.
That is the thing that we do. And you're here to talk about a nice handful of video games. We're going to start things off with a trilogy of sorts, a trio of titles from Hamster Arcade Archives. We'll start off with Arcade Archives Donkey Kong 3, originally developed by Nintendo console port by Hamster, released April 5th on the Switch for $7.99. Donkey Kong 3 is a shooting game released by Nintendo in 1983. Take on the role of the hero Stanley and use your sprayer to drive away Donkey Kong and exterminate the various flower-stealing bugs that appear in the botanical garden. Get high scores with a perfect bonus by chasing off Donkey Kong and having no flower stolen. Chris, tell us about Donkey Kong 3.
Well, like most arcade games that were made that early, you pretty much describe the entire game. But
so how does it play on the Switch?
Oh, it's great. But yeah, we'll actually talk about it. So Donkey Kong 3 is a chapter in the Donkey Kong universe, the Donkey Kong cinematic universe. That's not as often talked about. You know, Donkey Kong is the game everybody knows, and you know, most people like to point out Donkey Kong Jr. Hey, that's the one where Mario's the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, he's bad in the first place for capturing a gorilla. And like the plot of the original game, I think we talked about this when I reviewed the first game, but it's like Donkey Kong like escaped a life of abuse from his captor Mario, and that's the plot of the first game. It wasn't like he was an evil ape trying to kidnap a lady. That was just what happened because he was being abused. Anyway, so the second one is where you have to defeat Mario. But the third game is just completely different. So Donkey Kong, apparently homeless from his upheaval by the evil Mario, has now taken to living in a greenhouse. And So I guess the people who own the greenhouse or something call in this guy called Stanley, who is one of the lesser known Nintendo heroes. Stanley is an exterminator because you need an exterminator to get rid of a giant gorilla, apparently. I mean, I guess a plumber did it the first time. But, yeah, so the thing about it is that, like, in every stage, Donkey Kong, you know, hits these, you know, things out of which insects appear, and the insects kind of fly around, and then they come down after flowers that are arranged at the bottom of the level. So Stanley kind of had, it's basically, as they say, it's more of a shooter than the old Donkey Kongs. I mean, those are more like platformers, but this one, you have to run around and shoot the bugs as they come down and try to, you know, rescue the flowers before they're taken. But also you have to, continually shoot your bug spray at the gorilla in the middle and get him to, like, basically go to the top of the screen. And so it's one of those things where it's kind of like, you know, you're having to multitask the sort of like shooter elements as well as the kind of, you know, kind of a balloon pop element. So yeah,
it's a weird one.
It is a weird one. And, you know, there's not a whole lot else to say about it. I mean, the stages change after you beat it, which is interesting. I guess he just keeps finding different greenhouses to get into. And, you know, like any Donkey Kong game, it just keeps looping infinitely until you get, you know, 30 years later, get accused of cheating on a high score.
Oh, God.
You know, if that indeed is your fate with Donkey Kong 3. Most people just play it for a while and they're like, that was neat. And then they put it away. And so this one, it, like the original Donkey Kong, you know, Hamster did treat this one very well. It's ported perfectly, which actually that's really rare. That I know the original Donkey Kong is also pretty rare in terms of like accurate arcade recreations instead of just ports. But yeah, this one equally so is not often seen in its original arcade iteration. So that's already a treat. This game, unlike the other two we're going to talk about, actually does have a vertical mode that fills up the screen, you know, when the screen is vertical.
Nice.
And thus, if you have one of those cool flip grips, then this is a game that will utilize it.
Perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, past that, it's just got all of Hamster's wonderful, you know, quality of life things, such as difficulty, changing the difficulty, changing the amount of lives, the amount of score before you get an extra life. And, you know, if you change anything from the defaults, then, you know, you don't get to upload your online rank score. So that's, you know, the only difference there is that you got to play it in default mode to get the world record, if you will. But, you know, it's nice that that's there. I don't dare compare myself with other people who are playing this, but I did get the number one spot in the top scores on my first try. So that was fun.
Ooh. Good job.
Yeah. And, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, and also with all three of these games, for the first time, I got to try out my new Hori Hayabusa arcade fight stick for the Switch that is basically the only really decent fight stick that's currently available on the Switch. I bought one recently, and I use it to play my arcade games now, so that was really fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
So overall, $8, Donkey Kong 3, what do you say?
I mean, this is the way you're going to get it. I mean, it's certainly a good arcade game. I would say it's definitely one of Nintendo's better games. And this is coming from somebody who's not a huge fan of the original Donkey Kong, but I am a fan of shooters. And I really do appreciate the fact that they have you sort of doing something different with the genre, which, you know, for, I think it was, what, 1986 when this came out? Like, there was not a whole lot of variety to be had. So, you know, it's a very respectable chapter in the history of, you know, of arcade shooters in the early days. But, you know, it's well made. Music's good. Well, I mean, what music there is. And it looks nicer than Donkey Kong because, you know, it's a couple chapters later. I say, yeah, go ahead and get it if you're interested in these old Nintendo arcade games, because it's as good of a port as I've ever seen. So,
and it's not something you see often.
No, and I argue that it is more fun than Donkey Kong, but don't, you know, if the internet wants to come at me on that one, I'm not going to defend myself.
All right, well, the next game to talk about is Arcade Archives Elevator Action, developed and published by Hamster, released March 14th on the Switch for $7.99. Elevator Action is an action game released by Taito in 1980. Is that how you say it, Taito?
Taito.
Yeah. In 1983, Taito. Same year as Donkey Kong 3.
A spy, your goal was way off.
Yeah, you were.
Sorry.
See, you should listen. I say this stuff in the beginning. As a spy, your goal is to infiltrate the building and escape with all the confidential documents. Use elevators to crush enemies, attack them by shooting down lamps, and more. Chris, tell us about Elevator Action.
Okay, so Elevator Action, one of the, I think one of the lesser celebrated Taito arcade games.
I love Elevator Action.
I know. I bought it on the NES a long time ago, based on the title alone. Because I was like, Elevator Action, that sounds ridiculous. And I started playing the game and it seemed even more ridiculous because, you know, this isn't, you know, 1983, I was all of one. So I didn't really have a lot of experience with these things in the day. But revisiting this one after so many years, I actually quite like it. So basically, yeah, the game starts with you grapple hooking, you know, action movie style onto the top of a building. Although the characters in this game are pretty rinky dink, you know, they move a little like squishy, like motions and stuff like that. And, you know, they're very small. It's just, you know, looks like a fancy, you know, Atari game or something like that. But basically, yeah, you go through into the elevator, or you can go down escalators. Sometimes the game changes it up, and you know, the elevator stays in the center of the building, and as you go down each floor, there's doors, and out of each door, well, or different doors depending on you know, what, where you are, the guys come out and they try to shoot you, and you can duck and shoot them. It's all about timing, basically getting a shot to hit them as they come out of the door before they get a chance to shoot you. And then there's even more fun things, like, which kind of defies physics a little bit, but this isn't really that kind of game. But you can actually squish people with the elevator, which is wonderful. They have their own special animation for getting squished by the elevator, which is one of my favorite parts. But yeah, basically, the, like I said, each level has all these blue doors and things like that, you know, across the one screen that kind of scrolls down as you go down it. You know, you start on the 30-something level and try to get down to the basement. And then occasionally you'll find a red door, which you're meant to, like, enter into, and then you grab, you know, a document, and then it adds a bonus point to your score. And then once you've gotten all of them, then you, you know, get down to the bottom floor and, you know, get away, and then they send you to the next building. The caveat, of course, is that if you don't get all the secret documents, they just start the level over until you do get the document. So it's one of those. You know, lives are not like immediate, so you can't just dump quarters into the thing. You have a set amount of lives, and then you can choose to continue if you know, if things go sideways. Yeah, basically. Oh, and it has this one song in it that's kind of like this weird little bluesy song with just one little melody, and it's such a rinky dink thing. I actually had Gimmick cover it for one show, and we just had Kenny play it.
Nice.
Yeah, it's because we were teasing Bubble Bobble. We were like, here's the song from that Taito arcade classic.
And, oh, Lord.
Personal, you know, anecdote there. But yeah, so Elevator Action is like a little bit of a different thing. Like I said, it's fun, I think, because it's kind of cool to try and quick shot all the enemies before they can get at you. I think the premise is absurd and kind of funny. And again, I really like squishing people with the elevators, but this is not exactly Taito at their, you know, pinnacle. And this is somebody, you know, I just bought the Japan only Darius Cosmic collection, and I'm also a huge Bubble Bobble fan. So those are like things I consider Taito at their best. This one is, like I said, it's more of a second tier game, but I still think it's fun and pretty, you know, it's interesting for sure.
Well, then $8 on it. What do you say?
I mean, $8 if you don't already have this game via the NES, which is a pretty accurate port, or if you don't have either of the Taito Collection. I think Taito Collection 1 on the PlayStation 2 and Xbox has the original, and then the second collection has the second game, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, so this game has come out a few times. It's pretty available. But if this is something that you want to play, certainly the Switch is a great arcade machine because it's both portable and a console, and Hamster does a great job with these things. I'd say this one is take a look at it and see if it looks fun, and if it does, then it is fun. But, you know, like I said, this isn't everybody's favorite, but it is a good game. So I recommend it based on it being good, but I also say, you know, make sure to check it out and see if it's your thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a hidden gem.
Yes, for sure.
All right, well, one more Arcade Archives game to talk about, and that is ACA Neo Geo Puzzle Bobble 2, developed and published by Hamster, released February 7th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $7.99. Puzzle Bobble 2 is an action puzzle game released by Taito in 1985 as the second sequel to Puzzle Bobble. Bub and Bob, the bubble-spitting dragons from the action arcade game, are back again to take on new challenges. Skillfully bounce bubbles off walls, make chains, and erase them. Aim for even greater chains with the new star bubbles and metal bubbles. Chris, tell us about Puzzle Bobble 2.
All right, Puzzle Bobble 2. Well,
95.
Some people, 95? Oh, yeah. It was made in 95. Yes, I think that it is built on a Neo Geo engine. I can't say for sure. I don't know arcades that well, but it definitely has that Neo Geo feel to it.
Well, it's part of the Neo Geo series, so I'm guessing that, yes, okay, it's part of the Neo Geo series.
Okay, great. Well, once again, here's a Taito arcade game, and I mentioned Bubble Bobble earlier, and these are the two characters from it. It's considered a offshoot, or what do you call it, like a spinoff?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I guess the game is so absurd anyway that you might as well spin it off into whatever. But yeah, you play as Bub and Bob, and basically the interface of the game is that you are operating a machine that shoots colored, they look like marbles. They call them bubbles, but come on, they bounce off walls. and your task is to clear the screen above you, which is full of all different kinds of colors of other balls. And, you know, you can either shoot straight at the, you know, same color as the one that you are shooting. And you only, you know, you get to see the color of the one you're currently shooting and the next one. So you do get a little bit of planning ahead. But, yeah, as soon as you connect three, then they bust and your goal is to clear the screen. And, if you get, like, different bubbles that aren't matched up, like attached to one that is matched up, and then you bust that one, then all of them fall and you get like combo bonus points and things like that, which is important for the multiplayer game. So, you know, and by the way, like, we know this in the US as Bust a Move.
Yeah.
It came out several times. This particular chapter, actually, as Bust a Move, Bust a Move 2, is the one that famously came out on the Saturn and the PlayStation in a big long box with the bubbles with the human heads inside that had the toothpicks in their eyes. Like the toothpicks holding their eyes open.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, you remember that? Apparently that was a claim mixing up their ad with the actual cover they were going to use for the game. Because they came out with that ad, and the ad showed the game with the European cover, which is just an innocuous thing that just shows the game. But I guess apparently they switched them around accidentally. I don't know if it was accident or I don't know what was going on with the claim at the time, but that's an urban legend that I've heard. But yeah, this is that game. But
wow.
You know, disturbing cover for the original American release notwithstanding, this is a much better game than its prior game. So the original Puzzle Bobble had the one-player mode where you just cleared levels for 32 levels and then you beat the game. And then it had a two-player mode where you basically, two players are on screen, and anytime you got, like I said, those extra bubbles or a combo or anything like that, then it would throw more balls onto the other player's screen, just like any sort of combat puzzle game. Well, this one keeps the two-player mode, but it also has a one-player mode where you get to play against the computer in this way. So it has a competitive one-player mode rather than just stage clear. And for that reason, of course, it's more of a fully-fledged game. it does, it actually, so like it shows you like scenes before the stages, but no dialogue or anything like that. So you get kind of get treated to cartoons of like the Bub and Bob characters interacting with like different enemies, mostly from Bubble Bobble. And, you know, there's some recognizable Taito like characters in there. And, you know, the two player mode, you actually get more than one level, which is nice. And, you know, in the one player competitive mode, it like has different branching paths, just like a Darius game, where you choose, you know, the path, and then from there you can choose two more paths, and, you know, eventually you'll get to a you know, number or letter or whatever, where you get a different ending. Mm-hmm. And so multiple endings in the one player mode, which is, you know, pretty good for an arcade game.
Oh yeah.
An arcade puzzle game, of course. And yeah, like I said, this has a very mid 90s feel. It's very smooth. Soundtrack's really good. It's, you know, completely confectionery. This game is, utterly candy like. That is to say, the music is like really, really bright and chipper. The characters are bright and colorful, and, you know, the gameplay is, you know, bouncing colored balls around. So this isn't a, it's a weird game to get intense about, but I do understand there are people that get pretty intense about Puzzle Bobble. But yeah, this is actually, I think, a great game to get into the series with, because it's not quite as complex as some of the later chapters. For instance, there's Wii Bust a Move Bash, which has simultaneous 8-player action, which I actually thought was pretty cool at the time. And, you know, there's the series goes on, and there's all kinds of different things, but this is the one I feel like that's a great starting point. So I'm really glad to see it on the Switch.
Nice. So for $8, what do you say?
Yeah, $8, I say, is a must-have for, especially for puzzle fans, Taito fans, even Bubble Bobble fans should just give it a try, because this game is very easy to pick up. It's very fun, and, you know, it's uncomplicated but difficult to master. And, like, again, Hamster has that quality of life stuff where you can make the game very easy and give yourself generous amounts of continues. And, of course, you can just dump quarters into it every time you lose. Oh, yeah. And eventually get to an ending. So this is a great game for people who are new to the series, and also people who are more used to it, because it's an authentic, you know, port of the game. So this is a winner for sure.
Awesome. Sounds like three good games from Hamster. Yes.
Yeah, I personally love Elevator Action. I'm just saying. I'm not sure it's for everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I agree with you on Elevator Action, because that's an awesome game.
It is.
But you got one other game to talk about. Final game of the night is called My Big Sister, developed by Stranga Games and Grab the Games, published by Rattalaika Games, released May 7th on PS4, 8th on Xbox One, 10th on the Switch for $5.99. Meet Luzia, a sarcastic 12-year-old with a playful sense of humor. If you believe what she says, My Big Sister is an RPG-like adventure game that is not about her, but about her sister Sombria. Chris, tell us about My Big Sister.
Okay, so this one actually does bear some explaining, because I was confused by it at first. So this is, at its heart, a sort of a mystery-solving game. Not quite a point-and-click, but it's a mystery-solving game that is presented like a Super Nintendo-style RPG. However, the interface of the game is extremely similar to, like, a, you know, an older Final Fantasy, maybe even a Dragon Quest or something like that. It has very simplistic 8-bit graphics, but kind of detailed backgrounds and really nice music, so it kind of has more than an 8-bit feel to it. I was actually kind of reminded of it's a terrible game, but I was reminded of Tecmo's Secret of the Stars, which had an 8-bit look, but everything else about it was 16-bit. Anyways.
I remember that game. That was not a very good RPG.
No. But this one is better than that, at least. So that's where the similarities to an RPG kind of end, because there are no battles in this game. You don't fight anything, you don't level up, and you don't collect money and purchase stuff. You know, it's not that kind of game. It's basically using that interface to solve the mystery of how to uncurse your big sister. I don't want to reveal too much about the story because it does play out like a thriller, horror, mystery kind of thing. But let's just say you do play a sarcastic 12-year-old who is very endearing. It's not just that, you know, she's not a one-dimensional character. She actually has some layers to her. And I actually really like how this game is written. And actually, you know, it does have a lot of text. It kind of reminded me of The Longest 5 Minutes, which is a hybrid RPG and visual novel. So it does kind of play out like a novel in a way, because, you know, scenes of dialogue are often pretty long. You do talk to characters, you get lots of flashbacks to different events and flash forwards and even alternate things that happen depending on what decisions you make. So I can at least reveal like one scenario is that while this little girl is talking to her therapist about her her sister who has died, in at least it's establishing that early on. Like, we don't know at this point, the player doesn't know, but that's what they're talking about. Depending on your decisions, you know, the little girl is insisting that her sister is around. She's just turned into a ghost and she's still alive. But depending on, you're asked to grab two objects to show to your therapist, and they're like, pick one that, you know, sort of represents how you feel right now. And depending on which item you pick, your sister ghost comes out and eats the therapist, or you go to a restroom where she is, where she rises out of a pool of blood and yells at you and turns into a monster.
Oh God.
But ultimately doesn't eat anybody. So, and not only that, all of this affects the ending because there's multiple endings. I assume that there's a good ending and a bad ending. I haven't gotten either of them yet, but this is a very, it's enthralling. Like, cause depending, like I said, on different decisions that you make that are seemingly random, the story can play out in very different, but, you know, ultimately pretty violent ways.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I like about this game is that normally horror games are a little too much for me to handle. I'm not, you know, a big horror guy. I certainly don't like gore or anything. But since everything here is presented kind of 8-bit style, it manages to be disturbing without being, like, horrifying, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, like, raise my anxiety like a horror thing does. Instead, I'm more, like, intrigued and interested in what's happening, even when what's happening is really terrible. like I said, the game pulls no punches with its dialogue. It has, like, some really dark themes, definitely themes of murder, kidnapping, you know, dark stuff. And interestingly, like, the thing that kind of keeps you going is the fact that the little girl Luzia and her older sister Sombria have a sisterly relationship where they're constantly, like, you know, kind of yelling at each other but also caring about each other and all these different things. They're like, they're still, even though her sister is a kind of ghost, you know, a cursed ghost demon sort of thing, you know, they still have little, like, spats here and there. So it's a really interesting story. Like I said, it's little more than just kind of walking around an RPG-like world and talking to people and then making various decisions or trying to find items that you can then, you know, there's only a button for talking and a button for accessing your inventory and then using items on different people, you know, who are represented by, you know, if you can interact with something, an exclamation point appears over your head. No. So it's just one of those kind of things. It's kind of like, the, you know, only the part of the RPG where you're walking around talking to people. But I will say that despite this limited interface, I actually found this game really fascinating, and I played it for a lot longer than I thought I was going to. Nice. So, yeah.
Well, overall, $6 for My Big Sister. What do you say?
$6 is really hard to not recommend. I mean, for one, I think this game is really interesting, and I really like, again, I find that the dialogue has a realistic quality to it as well as being entertaining. I'm really fascinated to find out how this game plays out, and of course I know I'm going to have to play it a couple of times to get the best ending.
Yeah.
But, you know, that I don't mind that. This is definitely for the visual novel fan or people who are into the writing of a game rather than the action, because there's really no action to speak of. So as long as you know that you're not going to be like, and you can get game overs. If you make a wrong decision, you can get killed. And then you just have to start over at the save. Because there are save points in the game. But, you know, death is just, you know, you make a bad decision, cutscene shows you dying, and then you start over. So there's no fighting your way through this one or anything like that. You just kind of have to roll with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for $6, I mean, this game is definitely good enough. It looks cool. It's interesting. I think it's well written, and I say that's good enough for me.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to Purnell and to Jacob for coming on and doing their thing. Do you have any final words to end the show?
Go get you an arcade fight stick. They're so fun. Like, you really don't know until you have one. They're so cool.